casas. Me saluda una morena.
Sargento, ¿a dónde vas?
Hoy me voy para la ciudad a buscar la suerte.
What's up, Rise Up Radio? That was a track called Hoy Me Voy by Sergeant Garcia. And if you don't understand Spanish, in the song he's talking about leaving his town for the big city and for a better life. That trip from the country to the city is a dream that many people throughout the global south pursue in search of jobs. But the kinds of jobs created by these monster free trade agreements like the FTAA are not usually the kind that actually allow for a better life.
We've been talking about the free trade area of the Americas and the protest against it that took place this week in Miami. But fair trade and economic justice aren't only international issues. Right here in our fair city, there are organizations that are working hard for economic justice, working hard for fair and equal access to credit and financial services that are so essential to the economic health of both nations and neighborhoods.
We are joined now by Day Del Rio from the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, also known as NEDAP. Day is also on the board of the Lower East Side People's Federal Credit Union, and we're also going to have Kat inform our discussion. Believe it or not, she does work outside of WVAI. Kat actually is running the Resource for Youth Seeking Economic Justice, a new project at NEDAP that supports youth groups working on economic justice issues. Day, are you with us? Thank you for taking time out from work to be on the phone. Hello?
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, no Day. Just to lead it off, what is predatory lending? It's something that we hear about. It's something that people talk about on the international level in terms of these international trade agreements and international lending policies, but on the local level, in terms of NEDAP's work, what does it mean?
Well, the term predatory lending, it's, you know, sort of self-explanatory. It refers to lending practices that are predatory or abusive. But generally, it's used by community groups and advocates like us to describe loans that are inherently unfair or too expensive and even discriminatory. Basically, predatory loans, they're not just unaffordable, but they really can devastate people's lives. I think one of the worst examples is when someone unknowingly takes out a mortgage to buy their first home, which they've saved up for, and that mortgage turns out to have these huge fees and high interest rates or these monthly payments that are much higher than the lender promised. The result of predatory lending practices like that is that in communities all over New York City and the country, there are these huge waves of families that are losing their homes to foreclosure because they got involved in a predatory loan.
Okay. I think people often associate the term predatory lending with mortgages, sort of like the example that you just gave. But are there other abusive financial practices that might be more relevant to young people who aren't taking out mortgages yet?
Yeah, unfortunately, there are. There are a whole range. And, you know, for example, there's a relatively new problem in New York City that's called payday lending. And it's not actually an on-the-ground problem where we don't have storefronts or lenders that are making these loans here on the streets, but we have these ads that come up on the radio stations or that you see on the subway that offer fast cash, you know, up to $500 will deposit in your checking account by tomorrow. We don't check your credit. All you need to have is a bank account, and a steady income, which, you know, can be a very low income, either from a job or even public assistance.
Well, that sounds great. I mean, what's the problem with it?
There's no problem. It's just great. No, I mean, it's like anything that sounds too good to be true, it definitely is. And these are some of the most abusive loans that are out there. And even though they're relatively small, you know, they're not the size of a mortgage loan, they're, you know, usually up to $500, they carry interest rates that can reach as high as 800%. Basically, to take out a $250 loan, you're going to end up paying, you know, at least $60 in fees. And if you don't pay it back within 2 weeks, which is when they require you to pay it off, you'll end up paying that fee over and over again.
What do you have any sense of how many young people are actually trying to, what they think, take advantage of these offers?
Yeah, well, one of the problems is that because we don't have it on the ground here, the institution that's offering it in New York is actually based in Delaware, and they're just advertising through 800 numbers and things like that. So we don't have the kind of controls or regulation that allow us to know who's taking out the loans.
Mm. But I think in terms of young people's involvement with this, it's young people who are often the people who are short on cash, who really need that quick cash, and there's not a lot of alternatives for people. I mean, in a lot of communities, the only alternative really is a pawn shop, and that's not exactly the best option either.
Right, and it looks so attractive to be. I mean, I've been on the subway looking at those those ads for quick money.
Young people that have jobs, you know, or in school working part time would definitely be a you know, kind of main target of these lenders.
Day, could you also talk a little bit about the, we, in my neighborhood over in Bed-Stuy, I've seen more and more the Jackson Hewitts popping up in the H&R blocks. It's getting to be towards the end of the year, and the tax preparers start to reappear in our communities.
Definitely. When tax time comes around, one of the worst abuses that are out there are what's called refund anticipation loans. If you, you know, walk by any H&R block or Jackson Hewitt, you'll see these loans that say, you know, instant refund or, you know, something like that, instant money. And basically what that is something that they tell you that they're going to give you your refund almost instantaneously, either the same day or within the next day or two. That way you don't have to wait, you know, a couple of weeks or, you know, depending on how you would get your tax return from the IRS, they say they'll offer it to you so much faster. The problem with that is that they don't really make it clear that what they're making you is a very expensive loan. And again, you know, same kind of fees that come along with payday lending, they can be very high, hundreds in the hundreds of percentages. And what people don't know is that if you have an account, you can get direct deposit for your income tax return, and that, you know, takes maybe a few days longer, but is free.
Could you get into why it's important for communities to have access to fair credit?
Well, yeah, I think, you know, there's so many reasons why credit is important. It's not just to have a credit card to make purchases. You know, individuals need credit for emergencies and other expenses that you just can't plan for that will aid you financially. And also to kind of better your situation if you want to go to college, unless you have that money in cash, you know, or you've been lucky enough to have that saved for you, you're going to need to take out loans to go to school. People that want to buy their homes or start up a business and have some kind of financial stability and build assets for themselves, you need to have credit for that for almost everybody. Communities, on the community level, it's important because if businesses are to start up and grow, if nonprofits and other community centers want to open up, if homeownership rates can rise, all, you know, credit is a kind of vital tool for all of that to happen.
And how does this abuse happen? Why don't people just go to a regular bank? And what role do the regular banks, the mainstream banks, play, if any, in this whole abusive arena?
Well, as you might imagine, you know, a lot of times the reasons people take out these loans, you know, like why would someone even go to a predatory lender? You know, for one, it's not always obvious that a lender isn't kind of above board. It doesn't come out until later that you've been made a predatory loan. But also they're just, in many communities and for many people, better options either don't exist or aren't advertised, and they're hard to find. And that's sort of why you'll see in New York and, you know, most places throughout the country that predatory lending is concentrated, hugely concentrated, in communities of color and other lower-income neighborhoods where banks and kind of the mainstream lenders that offer more affordable services just don't have a bank branch presence there, or they don't make enough loans. I think the other side of it is that there aren't enough laws out there that are protecting people from abusive lenders, or enough enforcement of the laws that do exist. So it's very hard to sort of, on a system-wide basis, improve the situation.
And the predatory lenders, are they related to the big corporate institutions? What's the relationship between the sort of, I mean, you hear, at least I hear in the economic justice field, that it's sort of just a few bad actors and that it's just a few sort of fringe institutions that are abusing people, particularly in low-income communities and communities of color. Is that accurate?
Yeah, well, it's not yet. But what's interesting about that is that I think the faces of these companies are sort of the fringe institutions. They're either smaller mortgage companies or these kind of untraditional lenders and companies. But, you know, what's interesting is that a lot of the mainstream banks that people think of have actually purchased these sorts of companies that offer loans that are more expensive and sometimes predatory. Some examples are that Citibank, or Citigroup, I should say, the umbrella of the whole Citi kind of empire, has a unit that's called Citi Financial. And Citi Financial makes mortgages just like Citibank does, but they make vastly, very different mortgages. They're differently priced. The Citi Financial mortgages are more expensive. Some say they've been known to make predatory loans. The Citibank loans are kind of the conventional, very affordable loans that you want to get. And those two companies operate in different communities. They target different consumers. And basically, you have the Citi Financials of the world focusing on lower-income neighborhoods and communities of color, and Citibank is serving more affluent, whiter communities and people. HSBC recently acquired Household Finance, which many would say is a known predatory lender. You know, they've been accused of that and have had all kinds of settlements and things like that, and they're now under the HSBC umbrella. So the larger banks, while maybe they're not the face of it and they would say they're separate from it, they're definitely connected to these other lenders.
And I just want to add that these are, in a lot of cases, the same institutions that are relating or supporting the international trade deals, that are backing the IMF bonds, that are supporting the World Bank-led construction projects. So the same institutions that profit from abusive practices at the local level are often the institutions that benefit from the global movements of capital and the U.S.-led dominance and imposition of unfair lending and trade practices on all the other countries in the world, essentially.
Right, and earlier we were speaking about the lack of fair trade within the FTAA negotiations, and now we are speaking with Day from the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, known as NEDAP, and you're listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI. I wanted to ask both Kat and Day, what resistance, we see the resistance that's going on in Miami against this kind of negotiation to open up and flood the markets and have this idea of quote-unquote free trade. What's going on locally to resist the denial of access to fair credit?
I mean, I would say I think that one of the big things that people are doing is organizing. We bring groups together in coalitions. We actually, NEDAP doesn't work with individuals, so we work with community groups, but Day is on the board of the Lower East Side People's Federal Credit Union, and I think credit unions in a lot of ways are a really good form of community-based resistance to these global institutions.
Right. You know, like Kat was saying, NEDAP is just one of many groups that are kind of organizing and doing advocacy at policy levels and with, you know, these kind of financial institutions to try to change the way these services are offered. But, you know, you can't kind of just do that. You have to have these other options to point people to. And one of those options are community development credit unions, like Kat said. So if people don't want to deal with banks, or if there aren't any banks to deal with, you can use a CDCU. And basically what these credit unions are they function as community-owned banks. And they're usually based in neighborhoods that are lower income or where there aren't a lot of bank branches. They offer a lot of the same services as banks, like checking and savings accounts, also credit cards and loans. The difference is that these credit unions are much more affordable and they're accountable to the community. Their whole mission is to provide affordable services and responsible credit to people, especially those who aren't served by banks. So you can feel safe going to them.
And that includes youth. A lot of credit unions have youth accounts and youth programs, even in some of the high schools around the city.
That's right. Okay. And if you want to find out where a credit union is near you, you can, or a community development credit union, I should say, which are these the kinds that we're talking about, you can contact actually a trade association for those credit unions. That's called the National Federation of CDCUs, and their number is 212-809-1850.
And their website is www.natfed.org. They happen to be our neighbors here at 120 Wall Street.
There you go.
And we'll try to have that information uploaded onto our website, which is www.riseupradio.com.
That's
Student Voices for Peace. That's right. Student Voices for Peace, our former name. We haven't quite changed the website like we've changed our introductions. This is Rise Up Radio, formerly known as Student Voices for Peace. And the website is www.studentvoicesforpeace.org. A new aspect of NEDAP, the Neighborhood Economic Development Advocacy Project, is a program that CAT has started, and it's the resource for youth seeking economic justice. Kat,
how is economic justice a youth issue?
Well, it is a youth issue. I mean, I think people often don't think about economic justice as being something that young people would get involved with or care about. But I think it's a question of how you define economic justice. I mean, to me, first off, young people also have jobs and families, the same as people who are older, and they need access to credit. They need access to affordable mortgages. They need to not get ripped off by payday lenders or the rapid refund tax preparers, just like everybody else. On another level, young people are members of communities that suffer when there is abusive mortgage lending, which some people say is tied to displacement and gentrification. So if the people who have been in a community for a long time lose their home and leave, that has a really destabilizing effect on a community, and that affects young people and, you know, the community as a whole. I think economic justice is a youth issue because we spend more to incarcerate our young people than we do to educate them, and that's economic justice straight up. I think young people need to be able to get involved more with these discussions around economic justice. And this new project that we've started at NEDAP is basically going to be working with youth groups around economic justice issues. And it's new. It's a new project, so a lot of this is in the early stages. But the acronym is RISE for Justice, and it's Rise Up Radio, so I'm getting all tongue-tied. But basically, the project is going to be providing workshops and trainings for youth groups around a big range of economic justice issues. RISE is also going to be working with youth activists that are working around environmental justice and prison reform and educational justice to try to connect those really vibrant struggles with the economic justice work that's going on in the city. And also, I just want to say really quick that I hear a lot in my work about, you know, young people don't know how to manage money and people are getting into all this credit card debt and people are getting caught up in bad student loans and this and that. And while I think it's true that people do need financial education, it has to be in a context of, you know, are people able to get living wage jobs? Are people able to get scholarships? Is the tuition going up? Right. I mean, all of that to me is essentially economic justice.
I gotta talk to you after the show because I'm in debt, girl.
So, Kat, if people want to get in touch with you at NEDAP or DAY and find out more about the larger institution of NEDAP and even more specifically about RISE, where can they go?
Well, NEDAP has a website. It's www.nedap.org. That's NEDAP.org. And then NEDAP.org/RYSE, that's Resources for Youth Seeking Economic Justice. Is the website specific to this project. And again, I just want to reiterate that NEDAP doesn't work with individuals, but if there are community groups or youth groups out there who want to get involved with the work that we're doing or have questions for us, please check out our website.
Yeah, is there also a phone number that people can call?
There is.
Putting you on the spot.
Yeah, our number is 212-680-5100. But I encourage people to get at us online if they're able to log on, because that tends to be the best way to find out about the work that we're doing and find out more about our programs.
It's a great website. You're listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, your peace and justice radio station. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back to give you some information on the latest news for Critical Resistance, who was targeted and attacked by the police last weekend, and also an important conference that will be going on this weekend.
You're listening to Rise Up Radio on WBAI New York 99.5 FM. And that was Manu Chao.